How's everybody doing? Well, we're thrilled to be here, and we're thrilled you're here. I'm Dave Roselli. I'm the Vice President of Advancement. This is my home. I was raised in the East Bay Area, so I'm thrilled to be back here. Yeah. De La Salle graduate. There you go. Well, welcome to the conversation series. We're happy to be making this tour, and we've been around the country. We were last night in Menlo Park, and tomorrow night we'll be in Westlake Village, so near Malibu. Then we're going to be in Costa Mesa on Thursday night. And then back home, we're going to Washington, D.C. next week. We've been in Atlanta. We've been in Denver. And I think a variety of other places, all over the state of Texas, of course. And we'll continue with this as we go into what is going to be a really, really exciting year. Now, just to get an idea of the composition of the room, and I suspect there's a lot of parents in here, but how many parents do we have in the room? Okay, that's what I figured. Now, how many alums? Oh, there we go. Love it. Love it. East Bay alums. Natives of the East Bay?
No, native of Louisiana.
Okay. All right, and what are you doing in the East Bay now? Okay, great, great. Well, just to give you an idea, a little bit about how things are going to flow tonight, we're going to have a little bit of a conversation between Jason and the president, so then an opportunity to open up and have questions and conversation with you. So as you're thinking about anything that they might not discuss in the first 30 minutes or so that you want to talk about, please feel free to be armed and ready to answer that or ask that question, and we'll be able to have a conversation. Before we start, I would like to ask Darren to come up, if he would, and lead us in a word of prayer to lead off our session.
Thank you, Dave. All right. Dear Lord, thank you very much for this evening. Great opportunity for all of us to get together and hear from the leadership of Baylor and just bless our conversations tonight to us as well as we converse amongst each other, and just bless Baylor, the university, the administration, and in Jesus' name, amen.
Thank you. And I do want to introduce Rebecca Malzahn. Rebecca is our Director of Development for the state now of California, and she resides in Southern California, but she's, there you go. But she's up here in the north as well. Leading our discussion today is Jason Cook. Jason is our Vice President of Marketing and Communications. He's been with us since December of 2016, strong man of faith. We're thrilled to have him. He is the man behind the idea of the Shine the Lights Bright campaign, and I see the heads nodding because that's been a really neat program that we've launched in the fall and has now kind of taken on a life of its own. Our academic strategic plan is now called Illuminate. Our campaign, which you're going to hear a little bit about, is called Give Light. So there's a lot of tentacles that are coming off of that that campaign that Jason spearheaded in the fall. And then, of course, we are so thrilled to have our 15th president, Dr. Linda Livingstone, with us. And she is beginning, believe it or not, I cannot believe it, but beginning her second year and has been on the road and tireless throughout the country. In fact, in June of last year, so 12 months ago, we went right out on a journey, 120-day journey around the country, small little gatherings like this, started in Dallas, and then we headed out to the East Coast, and it seems like she's been on the road continuously ever since. But we're thrilled to have her with all of the tremendous experience that she brings to the presidency with her time at George Washington and at Pepperdine and at Baylor for a dozen years before heading off and taking on those deanships at those two institutions. So why don't we give our president a round of applause?
Thank you.
And I turn over the conversation series to Jason.
Yeah, thank you very much, Dave. It's wonderful to be here for the conversation series. And Dr. Livingstone, welcome back to California.
Thank you. Good to be back.
We always talk about Malibu days. And
they laugh at me because I say, oh, this is like a Malibu day. And they're like,
well, we have no idea. So after,
but you all know what that is.
It's so. 100 degrees in Texas today. So
that's
now
not,
we're
a Malibu day. No,
yes.
Not a Malibu day. No, not a Malibu day. No.
Well, we're going to have a conversation. We're going to ask some questions and kind of give you an idea of what's going on at Baylor at the university, kind of a fireside chat, if you will. It's always dangerous for me to sit here and ask my boss questions. Thank goodness that performance appraisals are done for this year,
right.
So I'll get a little bit of grace. But we'll ask some questions and then have an opportunity for you to ask some questions as well, some topics, as Dave mentioned, that we may not have covered. So this past Friday was a big day for us at Baylor because it was your one-year anniversary,
right.
As Baylor's 15th president. So definitely deserves some applause. You know, 1 year, how would you characterize that first year? And what's impressed you most about returning to Baylor since you were a faculty member previously?
Yeah. Well, let me just add my welcome to all of you. It's fabulous to have you here and such a wonderful group of folks from different sort of parts of the Baylor family. So appreciate your interest in what we're doing and your taking the time to be with us this evening. But you know, Jason, it's been just a fabulous first year. I mean, I think for me, coming back to a place that I'd been before for 12 years and a place you loved and where you already knew people was actually really good, because you kind of start a bit ahead of the game from going to a place where you don't know people and have not been there before. So I think that was a huge advantage for me this past year. And one of the things I've learned as I've traveled around the country across Texas is just what a deep commitment the members of our Baylor family have to Baylor. And we went through some really difficult times as an institution, and yet people still love the university. They want to work with us. They want to help us move the university forward and support us. And so that has just been very affirming for me as a new president and really builds a great foundation for the future. And then back on campus, I of course knew a lot of the faculty and staff because I'd been there for quite a while, but also great to meet our new folks. And they've just rolled up their sleeves and worked hard on the planning that we're doing, on providing great learning experiences for our students. And so that's been fun to reconnect with the faculty. But of course, the joy of being on a college campus is our students. I know we've got a new student that's going to be in the fall, and some new parents of new students, and our students have just welcomed us and loved us, and it's just a great group of young people that are doing such wonderful things both on our campus. And this summer, we have, I think, 600 or more camps around the country. We have over 700 doing mission trips, and I don't know, thousands doing internships. So we are flinging that green and gold far with our students this summer. And so it's been a real joy to be back and reconnect. And I just can't say enough about the experience we've had this first year.
Certainly. Well, you've got 12 months and 365 days of memories.
Yes.
All right. So I'm going to ask you what what memory stands out the most, but I'm going to give you what mine is of you. So we were, as Dave mentioned, we launched a new marketing campaign called Where Light Shine Bright back in January, and we had this great launch teed up, and everything was sequenced down to the T. And on our campus, we installed these huge letters throughout the campus where you actually stand in and you make a letter for, like, the words Baylor. Where Baylor, we have the Y missing. So people go in, you make the Y, and you post the picture on social media. And then we also have one on Fountain Mall that says lights, and the I is missing. So, we have this whole campaign, and Saturday morning, I'm scrolling through my Instagram feed, and all of a sudden we have the president sitting on top of her 6'10" husband, Brad's shoulders, making the I. In the word lights, and it took off on social media, and all of a sudden the campaign launched a couple days earlier.
Yeah, we kind of beat the launch a little bit. Sorry about
that,
Jason.
It was great. It was organic, but that's probably my first favorite memory of your first year. But what really stands out for you?
Well, you know, there's just so many things about the year that have been really special for us. One that was in the fall that was really meaningful on several levels. Those of you that are students or were students, you probably ran the Baylor line when you were at Baylor, and your freshmen that are coming will. And I think we started running the Baylor line. It's our freshmen have these yellow football jerseys, and they run out before the football team, and then they make a pathway for the football team to run in before every football game. And I think we started doing that in 1974, and for 20 years, men could only run the Baylor line. Women couldn't. And in fact, the women sat in the stands were part of the Baylor sidelines. And so I had my, I don't know, I hadn't been on the job more than a couple of weeks, and I had a woman email me and say, you know, I would love to run the Baylor line. Could I just come some Saturday and run with a freshman? And all I could think was, oh my gosh, if I let one person do that, you know, I'm just going to have a flood of people. Because she'll take pictures and she'll tell everybody. And so I called Jason, and he talked to the athletics folks and the student life folks. And so they built out this plan to, at the Texas football game last fall, to have a commemorative running of the line for our women that didn't get to run anybody before 1994. And they came to me and go, yeah, you know, it won't be that big of a deal. We'll have like a couple hundred people do it. And I looked at them like, yeah, right, you know. And, you know, we did registration. We got up to 500. And they're going, okay, you know, this is like going to be a big deal. And then by the time we got to the game, we had over 900 women signed up. We had bought every gold jersey anywhere in the United States. And it was just this really powerful moment that day at the game. And, you know, we had women crying. We had, you know, it was a very moving time. We had parents. We didn't run the freshmen with the women because we were afraid they would hurt them, but we did have some freshmen and moms, you know, that worked out being there together, and it was just this wonderful moment where we celebrated this really special, unique Baylor tradition, but also in the context of that, sort of acknowledge that, you know, sometimes we need to change those traditions a little bit and broaden them and engage people more broadly. And so it was just a really, really special time and something that I think meant a lot to the community in a real special way.
And thank goodness, no injuries.
No injuries. I'm not sure how much actually running of the line there was in that particular moment, but the women had a great time. And it was great because they had kids all up in the stands watching them. Their husbands were carrying their purses and everything. And it was just a fun day. So.
Well, you came into the presidency a couple of challenging years at Baylor, and you walk in and immediately got to work. Mm-hmm. And so how would you characterize the current state of affairs at the university?
Yeah. Well, after a difficult time for a university, you sort of want to get a feel for, you know, whether you think the university is still healthy and strong. And just bottom line, it's been really apparent to me how strong and resilient Baylor is as an institution. We're 173 years old. We've been through difficult times before. But particularly with this case, you know, clearly, as I said earlier, I was out with people and you just feel that sense of love and care for the university, you knew that was a good place to be even after that difficult time because people love the university and want it to be successful. But you also look at metrics. And really, at a private university, you look at enrollment and you look at fundraising. And that gives you a sense of whether people are still, you know, connected to the institution and care about it. And so our fall enrollment last fall hit right on our enrollment target of 3,300. I think we have a couple people in the audience that had freshmen in that class. It was probably one of our top two most academically qualified classes. It was our most diverse class we had ever had. And they've had a great year. They've been a wonderfully successful class. And so this year we've just closed out our class for this next fall. I think we started orientations this week on campus and line camp. And again, we're going to have about 3,350, which is exactly kind of in the sweet spot of where we want that class to be. It is just right at 40% out of state, which indicates that we're building a national brand. I would probably say 5 years ago, we were probably 70% Texas. And now, you know, we've dropped that. We think we'll be closer to 50% in the next 5 years or so. So that means that we've got a national brand. There's still huge demand for our the kind of Christian education at a significant university that we have. The class is our most academically qualified ever. So those of you that have kids in that class, congratulations. They're bright and they're going to be very successful. So the university's strong financially. I think it's strong culturally. And I just really feel like we have a very strong foundation on which to build. And again, just can't emphasize, you know, how pleased I was to learn over the years sort of the strength and resilience of the institution and what that means given the difficult time the university was through.
Certainly. Typically on the conversation series, we have our board chairman, Joel Allison, is with us. He's unable to be with us tonight. But one thing that struck me when you both came in at the same time and you worked together to establish some decision-making principles.
Right.
And Chairman Allison always talks about the four non-negotiables. Mm-hmm. So what are those? Because it really speaks to where we're leading the university at this time.
Yeah. No, and really, Chairman Allison, I wish he could share these with you because they're really principles that he came up with, and then we worked with the board to adopt these decision-making principles, and I worked with my leadership team to do the same. And they're really, we want to ask ourselves when we have difficult circumstances to deal with or difficult decisions or important decisions, we ask ourselves these four questions. The first one is, will the decision keep Baylor University a Christ-centered university? It's core to who we are. It's essential that we do that. Second, will the decision help ensure that we stay connected and committed to our mission about preparing students for worldwide leadership and service? And so is it connected and supportive and moving our mission forward? Third, does the decision actually, is it consistent with the core convictions of the institution and the core values that we believe in? And then finally, is it the right decision for the right reason? And we've used that principle fairly regularly this year, both on the board and in our leadership team, and it's really been very good and grounding, and it aligns the board and it aligns the university leadership in a really important way. And I can't say enough about Chairman Allison's leadership and what a great partner he's been in the work that we've done this year.
Yeah, he always jokes that he was a 40-year executive in healthcare, and now as chairman of the board, he always remarks that he thought that healthcare was the most difficult, complex, and most regulated industry in the country until he started working in higher ed.
That's right.
And so it's been a very eye-opening environment for him.
That's
but
right.
Yes, he's been so supportive and a great leader in the current time. So I want to talk about the academic strategic mm-hmm. plan quite a bit, but before we get there, a couple of personal questions.
Okay.
You know, your top priority is your family. Mm-hmm. It's not Baylor, it's your family. And the first gent, Brad, first gentleman, our first gentleman that we've ever had.
Right.
And then also your daughter, Shelby, who's a senior volleyball player at Rice mm-hmm. University. So all three of you are former student athletes. Mm-hmm. And so how does your experience as a student athlete prepare you to become a university president?
Yeah. Well, you certainly don't think that's what you're going to become when you are a student athlete, for sure. But it's been an interesting reflection as I'm a president now, and actually having a daughter that's a college athlete is sort of interesting. And let me tell you, having a daughter, and I'll tell you this because you may have one someday, it is much harder having a child that's a college athlete than being one yourself, because watching them drives you crazy, you know, because you don't have control over what they're doing. But one, my family's has loved being back at Baylor. Our daughter was born in Waco, although she grew up in Southern California, and Brad is just loving being back in Waco. He's doing some teaching at the school he was at, and then is fabulous on campus with our students, so he's doing a lot of wonderful work as well. But you know, when I reflect back on my experience as a student athlete at Oklahoma State, played basketball there, and I think there's several principles or elements of that experience that I think were really helpful. I think one, you learn a lot about resilience as a student athlete. And you learn how to work through difficult times, you learn how to win, you learn how to lose. I had a major knee injury when I was in college, and so you had to work through that. And so you learn how to kind of work through difficult times and still how to be successful through that and still how to have a good attitude and to stay focused through those difficult times. And that is very helpful when you're in a position like this. I think it also helps you with humility. My background is in organizational behavior and leadership, and I actually think one of the most important qualities of a leader is to be humble. And being an athlete humbles you at times. There's always somebody, usually, that's better than you, and you think you're the best when you leave your high school. You think you're the star, and you go to college, you realize, yeah, there's a lot of people out there that are as good or better than I am, you know, or other teams that are better than you. And so you have to learn how to sort of recognize your skill set, what you're good at, what you're not, and how to put people around you in a team setting on the basketball court, but now in my leadership role, that can help round out those areas that aren't necessarily your strengths so you can do the things that you're really good at. So I think that humility piece is important. And then the other one I would mention is I think that when you're a member of a team like that, you learn to sort of be a steward of the team. And how do you sort of take care of the team and be a good member of the team and help others to be successful? I view a lot of what I do is helping the people around me to do what they do well and to use their gifts and skills in really significant ways. And on a team, a basketball team especially, that's what you do. You know, you give an assist or you help out on defense or you do something that helps somebody else out on your team. And so you're a good steward not only of what you're gifted with, but of what other people are as well. So I think there were many, many experiences as a college athlete that have helped me through the years to be able to do the things I have as a leader, and that I certainly hope will be helpful to Baylor.
And you still have a little bit of competitive streak in you, too.
Every now and then you see that come out, yes.
We try to keep up with you. It's quite difficult.
Yeah, my family can't do anything without it becoming a competition. It's kind of fun.
So you counteract as a student athlete, but then also as a mother who's also a university president. Mm-hmm. So how does that perception or perspective inform you in leading a university? Mm-hmm. Because you also have you're a mom of a college student, too.
Exactly. Yeah, my daughter is will be a fifth-year senior at Rice next year, finish up her volleyball career. So it's been kind of interesting to have a child in college while you're a university president. And I think there's a couple of things about it. One, you know, when you have a child in college, you know, I worry about the same things for my daughter at Rice that those of you that are parents are worrying about your children that are at Baylor. And so it makes me very aware as a parent of, you know, how do we create an environment on campus that's supportive and encouraging, healthy and productive for our students? Because I want that for my child at Rice. And so how do we make sure that's happening for our students at Baylor? So I think it makes it more personal at that level. I think the other piece of it is I also know what I hope she gets out of that experience that will help her to be a really exceptional young adult when she leaves and do good and important things in whatever, you know, field she's chosen to do. So again, I want that for our students at Baylor too. And again, because I sort of see that and know that that's what I want in my daughter, I think it makes it sort of much more present as we think about what we're doing and why we're doing it and how that's going to have an impact on our students. Having a child in college when you're the president is also very humbling because she does like remind me periodically that I'm not always the president and, you know, that I sometimes need to act like I'm not the president. But, you know, that's good too, to have someone like that around to keep you humble.
Oh, certainly, certainly. So last month was very significant for us at Baylor because we presented this academic strategic plan called Illuminate to the Board of Regents, and it was unanimously accepted. And what the strategic plan will do is guide the next 5 years for us. So, you know, what are some of the highlights for the Baylor family to know, and why is it important for us to put a stake in the ground as a preeminent Christian research university?
Sure. Yeah, this was a really busy year in preparing for that board meeting and really having that plan together for the board. And the plan Illuminate flows out of the vision statement that was developed a number of years ago that's called Pro Futurus, which aspiration is for Baylor to move into the ranks of the top universities in the country while, you know, strengthening the integrity of our Christian mission. And that's a unique place to be in the world. Very few universities have done that or have tried to do it. And we feel like that's a really important place to reside in academics because we want to have influence even in a more significant and deeper way than we do now. We have wonderful influence through our students and faculty, but we also believe that there is a need in this country for a significant university with a Christian focus to have a voice, whether it's in academics or in policy or in business, and you develop that influence academically because you have really developed your research culture and built the reputation that way. And so we intend to do that. And we call the plan Illuminate because we kind of based on that scripture in Matthew that talks about how we need to let our light shine and let our light shine before others. And we think there's just much greater opportunity than we've even taken advantage of before at Baylor to let our light shine in the world in a way that has an even bigger and more significant influence that's had in the past. And so the last few years, as they sort of started the plan, it was more focused on student success, which is great. Our graduation rates have improved, our retention rates, our quality, our diversity, all the things you want to see. The next 5 years that we really have built out now focus on more of the academic enterprise, our faculty scholarship, faculty hiring, the research enterprise, and how do we connect that in ways that continues to support the educational mission but helps us have even greater influence as an institution in the country.
Certainly. Now, Illuminate has four foundational pillars in five strategic initiatives.
Right.
So give us just a brief overview of some of the components of the plan.
Yeah. So we have these pillars that underpin all that we're doing in the plan that, again, kind of ground us, much like those decision-making principles ground us. So the first is that we are going to continue to ensure that our that we have a Christian learning environment in which our students reside and participate, and that that's going to be a core foundational principle to anything that we do in the plan. Second, that transformational undergraduate education will continue to be a primary focus and emphasis of Baylor. It's been the core of the success of the institution. Many of you experienced it yourselves, or your children are experiencing it. And those two elements oftentimes get lost as universities become more research-focused or focus on being more preeminent. And we are deeply committed to maintaining the integrity and strengthening the integrity of those two. Third, we've got to grow our research and scholarly focus as an institution and grow graduate and professional programs. Those are really the areas where you build your reputation and build that ability to have influence. And then fourth is to really continue to ensure that we have nationally recognized, nationally competitive programs in what we call human performance, so in the arts and athletics. In many ways, those are the windows into the university from people that don't know us as well, because we have nationally prominent folks in music and arts and theater and then our athletics program. And so we want those to be, you know, wonderful windows into the institution, doing things at the highest level and in the right way. And we believe if we do those four things and maintain the integrity of those, no one else in the country will do it and can do it the way that we do it. And then out of that flows five academic themes, which is really where we'll focus on the research, the program development, and faculty hiring. And the first three are kind of in the STEM areas. Those are really important for outside funding and other things. But all of these initiatives are interdisciplinary across our schools and colleges. We have strength in these areas already. They are areas where we believe with some investment we can really move the needle on the metrics that are important to your reputation as an institution. And they're areas where we can work to help solve problems that are important in the world and will make a difference. So the first one is in health. We have a great footprint already in health. We have wonderful partners to work with that share our name in health. Baylor College of Medicine, Baylor Scott & White, and others already have a great foundation. Second is in data sciences, and you can't be in any field now that data doesn't matter. And then there's all kinds of, besides the technical side of the data, there's the privacy issues and the ethical issues, and we believe we can bring a unique perspective to that. And we know our students need to know how to deal with data and how to use data appropriately to make decisions. So that's important for us. Material science is another one. There's just so much work being done in that space about how do you make and design materials in a way that work better for people and for products. And there's a lot of funded research in that area too. And then we have some faculty that are doing some really interesting work there. The fourth area is in human flourishing and ethics. And that really does more to draw in our social sciences and humanities, our School of Social Work, our seminary, and really looking at how do we help make the world better for individuals, for communities, for societies, and help people to flourish more in the way that they live and interact and engage with one another. And that's, you know, very core to our Christian mission. And then the fifth area is Baylor in Latin America. Given our geography in Texas and our proximity into Latin America, the demographics are changing dramatically in that part of the country, as they are out in this part of the country as well. And we have probably 30 or 40 faculty that are doing interesting research in that area that had no idea that many other people on campus were doing that kind of work. And so we can, if we're more strategic about it and bring those people together, we can have a real impact in areas like human trafficking, economic development, even, you know, building out healthy church communities in Hispanic and Latino areas. So there's some tremendous opportunity there. And then the plan has a financial model underpinning it, a campaign that we'll launch in the fall, and then we have a facilities plan that goes with it. So it really stacks the plan, the facilities, the financial model, and a campaign in a comprehensive way that we've really never done at Baylor before. Yeah,
certainly. And you're a faculty member, and you mentioned a couple times the importance of faculty hiring. And obviously the faculty are going to be key to
Absolutely.
A strategic plan of this nature. You know, how do we go about ensuring that we're hiring top faculty, but then also they have an alignment with our specific Christian mission that we have?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and you know, it's one of the reasons people will sometimes tell you that you can't do what we're trying to do, because you can't find enough Christian faculty that can teach and research at that level, at the level that we need at a place like Baylor. And you know, what we've found over time, and the university's worked for a number of years to kind of increase its footprint in terms of reputation, quality of faculty and research, and there are a lot of really exceptional Christian faculty out there. You have to find them. They don't just sort of emerge. You have to look for them. You have to build relationships. So we're working with our department chairs and our deans to do that. And the more we build our reputation around these pillars and around the direction that we're going, we find those really top Christian faculty coming to us and wanting to be a part of that. Many of them would love to be at a Christian university that would support and nurture their high-level research. There just aren't places that you can do that, with rare exceptions. And so we also believe, as we build these initiatives out, we will start to know who more of those people are, because they will start finding us. And part of the campaign is also raising dollars for endowed professorships, research funding, because you also have to have the resources to bring these people in. So if we can combine the resources with these initiatives that and really begin to attract these folks, and then once you get a few of them there, others will start to see them. And we've seen that in several of our departments already, and it's already making a big difference.
So two questions people always ask is, how big is Baylor going to get?
Uh-huh.
And then also, what new buildings are in plans?
Yeah.
And that relates to Illuminate, too. So give us some insights there.
So as we've built out the plan, the financial model for the plan builds out these aspirations on new resources. It does not do it on the backs of the undergraduate tuition and the undergraduate educational model. So our goal with undergraduate enrollment is to keep it about steady where it is, right around 14,000. So that is around 3,400 new students a year, which is what we've had last year and this year. And that's what we intend to do going forward. And then modest tuition increases. Up until this last fall, we had 5-6% tuition increases for, I don't know, as many years as anybody could remember. And we dropped that to 4. We want to keep those in those modest levels going forward, and then build out other ways to fund the aspirations. And that's fundraising. It's some graduate professional programs. So any growth in numbers will be in the graduate professional program side. And then funded research will be critically important, as well as whatever we can do internally as an institution to sort of think entrepreneurial about the way that we do our work. So not a lot of growth undergraduate. It'll be flat. And then growth in graduate programs. And then your other question
was facilities.
Excuse me. So we do have a facilities plan. There are kind of 5 priorities. We have multiple stages of facilities plan, so it's probably about a 15-year or so facilities plan. But the first stage of the plan focuses primarily on academic facilities. So a science and engineering research facility is our highest priority academically. We have the science building that seems new, but it's about 12 years old now, and it's so full. We do not have any more room on our campus for new labs and research space for our folks in science, engineering, all of those areas. We are actually building out wet labs in Mars McLean Gym, if you've ever been there. I don't even know how you do that, but it's what we've had to do. And so that's a really high priority for us, and it will help support the health, the material science and the data science work. We want to build out the Honors College. We've got Honors Residential elements. We want to build out a classroom and office space there so it can all be integrated together. So that's a priority for us. So that's kind of a blended remodel new kind of, because it'd be remodeling the residence halls, but building out some new space for classrooms and offices. Tidwell Bible Building has got to be, it's probably our highest need refurbishment on campus. I'm not sure it's been refurbished since it was like built. And it's a beautiful building. It's where our history and religion departments are. So that's a priority. And then we have an athletic project in there as well. That would be a remodel, the upgrade of the Farrell Center that brings it into sort of the modern era, makes it a little bit more viewer friendly. It's not a real fan friendly arena. We need to build space for acrobatics and tumbling and volleyball. They kind of have to share space across campus. And then we would build a new football operations center that would free up. We have a beautiful Simpson Center where football is and all of our Olympic sports. And that would free up the Simpson Center for all of our Olympic sports space, and then move football back by the practice football facility and give them some of their a little bit more space as well. So it's a athletic project that would touch every single team on our campus and give every team on our campus better space and facilities, which is a little unusual because in athletics you oftentimes do a project that helps a team. But this comprehensive plan right there along University Parks would really help across the entire athletic program. So we're excited about the plans, and we're in discussions with kind of the top donors to help do some of the anchor gifts, and looking forward to beginning that process.
Certainly. So that's a lot about what's going on in growth on campus.
Uh-huh.
Waco has experienced mm-hmm. Incredible growth. How has the city, our wonderful city partners, how has it grown since you were a faculty member the first time?
Well, we were away for 15 years. I can't even believe what Waco's like now that I come back. When we were first talking about coming back and people weren't, you've got to come back to Waco. I mean, people buy second homes in Waco now, and they retire in Waco, and they vacation in Waco. And Brad are going, are you sure, this is the same place that we left? It is amazing what has happened in the community, and certainly Chip and Joanna and Fixer Upper has been an important part of that, but I think the growth of the university, building the football stadium. And then I think the other thing that's really exciting, and this was not the case when I was here the first time, the university and the city and the region have really begun to partner, to work together, certainly to take advantage of some of these things that just sort of happened that you didn't expect, but then to be much more strategic about how do we make this region a place that people will want to be. Partly our students, we have more and more of our students. When I was here before, none of our students ever wanted to stay in Waco. That was the first thing they wanted to do, was go to Dallas or Houston or come to California or go wherever. Now we have many of our students that would love to stay and live and work in Waco. So we're working diligently in the community to try to build out the economic base, build out the entrepreneurial and startup community so that there become more and more opportunities for our students and others to really stay and live and make Waco a part of their community if that's what they would like to do. So that has been probably one of the biggest surprises for me after being away for 15 years, was just the dramatic change I saw in the city and the downtown area. When we were there before, there was just nothing in downtown. You never went to downtown. And now there's condos and restaurants. And I mean, it's kind of this mini walkable urban space in downtown Waco. And I would have just never dreamed that when I was here previously. And it's been wonderful to see. And it's good for the university. It's good for the city.
So have you met Chip and Joanna? And do you have shiplap in the Albritton House?
No shiplap in the Albritton House. It's the style's not quite shiplap style in the Albritton House. But we have had the privilege to get to know Chip and Joanna a little bit. I tell the story. We traveled to the Oklahoma State men's basketball game with Chip and Joanna. We had not met them before. And so we go to the game at Oklahoma State. So my husband and I went to Oklahoma State. We played basketball at Oklahoma State. So we went back to the basketball game. We didn't realize it, but at one of the timeouts, the announcers at the Oklahoma State game, who know us, introduced us to the crowd at the basketball game. And I think the crowd at first was like, why are you introducing the Baylor president to us? But when they realized we were OSU alums and had played basketball in that same arena, they were very warm and gracious and cheered for us. And then they introduced Chip and Joanna. And, you realize you're really not important at all when you get introduced after Chip and Joanna, because the place just went nuts, And so they're just, they're clearly real celebrities, but they're just wonderful, dear people, and they're very much in person like they are on the show. I mean, they're just very genuine, and Chip, he wouldn't know a stranger if, everybody in the world is a friend to Chip. And so he was great to be around. And it's wonderful to be in a community where you have folks like that that have done so much to really advance the community in such positive ways. And they're great Baylor fans and supporters. They went to Baylor and are great supporters of the university.
All right, a couple of rapid-fire questions.
Okay.
All right. So favorite spot on campus? Other than your office
office.
Living on campus.
This is sort of on the edge of campus, but I love the Riverwalk down along the river behind the baseball field and across, and you go across to the football stadium, because you never used to go by. I mean, some of you, when you were in school, you didn't go to the river because that was not a safe place to go, but it's a beautiful area and very quiet. So it's a nice thing to get to do. So I love that part of campus. So it's kind of on the edge, but it's a beautiful part of campus.
Favorite tradition?
Let's see, favorite tradition. homecoming is really, really very special. We got to be homecoming parade marshals this year, and I had seen the parade before, but I was never in it. I wasn't a Baylor student. And it was just so much fun, and the whole community comes out. It's sort of interesting. You go through downtown, you see one set of the population of Waco, and you come up and you see a different part of the city, and then you come onto campus, and it just brings the whole community together, and all the students get excited about it. I know many of you probably participated if you were students, and it's just a wonderful time that brings us all together, brings people back to campus, and so I think it's a really special part of being at Baylor.
Favorite place to eat on campus?
On campus. Well, we live about a block from East Village, so it's really convenient. So we go there occasionally just because we're too lazy to cook or go out. You do have to go to Memorial to get Miss May's cookies. And every now and then I do have to walk to the sub and get Chick-fil-A just because I need a Chick-fil-A fix every now and then, yeah.
Therapy, that's
therapy, my Chick-fil-A therapy. You know, I lived in California before they had Chick-fil-A out here, and it just about killed us. So,
but we do have In-N-Out in Waco.
We do, you know, when we moved back to Waco and there was an In-N-Out burger, we're like, this is just wrong. I mean, how can you have In-N-Out in Waco? And they've got palm trees, and it's just weird. But yeah, we do get our In-N-Out occasionally and get our California fix.
Yeah. So tell us about the dog.
Oh, yes. All right. So, last fall, because we did not have enough to do as a new president and first family at Baylor, my husband and daughter decided we needed a new puppy. And so, and our daughter loves dogs, so does my husband, and I like them and tolerate them. And so we got this Labradoodle puppy. And the puppy's name, it's now almost a year old, is Boo, spelled B-U. So she is the first pup of Baylor. She actually has an Instagram account. First pup Boo that our daughter runs, and I think she has over 1,000 followers now, so she's quite popular. And our daughter has a great sense of humor, so if you want a little humor, you should follow Boo. But Boo is a huge hit on campus. My husband takes her on a walk almost every afternoon. The kids love the dog. They can all be having a bad day, and Boo stops by and wags her tail, and they love on her, and it makes, you know, makes for a good day. So she kind of has a ministry on campus, and my husband loves it, and so it's been fun. She's a great addition to the campus.
You bet. All right, so you be thinking of your question that you want to ask Dr. Livingstone, and while you're thinking of your question, some concluding thoughts in terms of the conversation.
You know, I just, as I reflect back and as I you know, think about the first year, I'm just so proud of our campus community and what we accomplished this year. The work we did on the strategic plan was a lot for a first year, and I just have to commend our faculty and staff for getting behind it, our board for making that happen. And then really I have to commend our students. It was just a really good year on campus, and lots of really positive experiences for our students. And so, I don't know that if I could go back and change anything about the first year, I'm not sure that there would be. And I think probably for us as a family, we were just so warmly welcomed and embraced in the community. And that has just made it such a joy for us to be back at Baylor.
Certainly. So opportunity for you to ask questions. So if you would, tell us your name, tell us your connection to Baylor, and we'll be able to answer any questions you have.
Very good. I love that question. That is a great question. So, there are just a lot of ways that parents can help us and be supportive. I mean, and some of you may be involved in parents. We have parents networks around the country, and which is a formal structure that we have for parents, but there's certainly ways for parents to be involved, even if they're not a part of that formal structure. But through that formal structure, parents participate in send-off parties in the fall when we send our new freshmen off. They do care packages for the students during the year. And probably the most important thing is they pray for our students. And you don't have to be in a parents' network to do that. As we have parents all over the country praying for our students and for the campus regularly, which is really critically important. I think the other thing you can do as parents, particularly in these places that are not as present in Texas, is be ambassadors for us at your schools and your communities. I mean, the way we get the best students to come is by word of mouth in many ways. We have recruiters here that do that formally, but the more they hear about the experience your children are having and why Baylor's a place they might want to consider, that really helps us to grow that base of students, particularly outside of the state. So, and then certainly, you know, anytime we're in the region, we hope that you'll show up and be a part of things and be present. And then we always love to have our parents back on campus if they can make it. We have a parents' weekend in the fall. Parents sometimes come back for homecoming. We've created a green and gold weekend in the spring around the spring football game. That is kind of like a spring homecoming. We had horrible thunderstorms this year, so it kind of dampened the day a little bit, but it was still a great weekend and lots of activities on campus. So anytime parents can come back to campus and kind of see what their students are experiencing is also, I think, a wonderful opportunity. So those are a few things. I don't know if I've missed anything that comes to mind. But, yeah.
Yes. Hi, my name is Tejal, and my son, who's coming as a freshman, and just wondering how the first year, first semester, how the high schools and then they're going to college, so how tough or how they're supposed to prepare themselves?
You know, it probably varies some from student to student, but I would say that I think one of the, some things for students that are new, one is really try to engage with people early so you build some friendships early, because it can be lonely being away from home for the first time, particularly if you're halfway across the country. And we know this not just at Baylor, but across the country, loneliness and isolation of students, particularly their freshman year, is one of the highest risk ways for them not to succeed and continue in college. And so the more they can build relationships early, whether it's over the summer during orientation line camp or whether it's they first get moved in that first orientation week, that's very helpful to begin to build those relationships and that support network. I think one of the other things is, you know, don't get behind in your studies early. It can be easy when you're in a new place and new things to do to sort of go, oh, I'll read that chapter later, or I'll put off studying for that test until the night before. And you just, it's risky to do that early on. And then the other thing I would say is sometimes freshmen, not just freshmen, but freshmen maybe particularly, wait too long to ask for help if they get behind in a class or not sure they understand how to study most effectively. So I really encourage freshmen to not be afraid to ask for help from the faculty member, from their advisor, from a classmate, before something becomes so challenging that they can't sort of dig themselves out of it. Everybody struggles at different times for different reasons, and just not being afraid to ask for help when you need it is really important.
We also have the Student Success Center.
Yes.
Which plays a key role.
It does. Yeah, we've got a fabulous center that helps support our students with where they have learning disabilities, students from first-generation families, for our veterans, students that just need help with study skills or acclimation to college. And that program is really only about 5 years old, and it's been critical to the huge transition we've seen in our retention rates and graduation rates. So we know that that kind of support is helpful. And so if students will take advantage of that early, it can be very helpful to them.
My profession, I'm sorry, two-pronged questions. First, I'd like to ask about, you know, with the rising cost of higher education, I'm sure the endowment fund is well supported, but what's the percentage of students that are taking advantage of in-house scholarships, endowment, as opposed to federal scholarships?
Yeah, I'm not sure I can give you the, I can give you the breakdown between the two. What I can tell you, our endowment's about $1.3 billion, which sounds like a lot, but it's actually we're under endowed for the size of institution we are compared to most other private institutions of our size and quality. So we know as part of this campaign that we've got to increase that endowment. And that helps us, one, because you can endow scholarships and then support students that way. But if you endow professorships and research funds, and you don't have to use your operating dollars for that, and you can get the faculty that you need, but you don't have to increase tuition to pay for that. So a big emphasis in our campaign is going to be around endowment dollars to help us be able to keep the cost of education down. I would say, I think the number, about 80% of our students get some kind of financial aid. Now that includes federal and everything. And we have 18% of this freshman class is first generation students. And in Texas, they have a program called TEG grants that are for Texas students that are low income students. And we have the highest dollar amount of private universities in Texas of TEG grants. So we are taking a set of students that some private institutions don't. They have pretty high financial need, but they're very bright students and they have tremendous opportunity. So we continue to look for ways that we can, for all of our students, but particularly for those with the highest need, try to help keep that cost down. I had a young woman that's coming next fall who was homeless for a while, and she's taking out loans and all the scholarships she can get, and she still had this like $3,000 gap that was going to make it difficult for her to come to Baylor. So we're trying to find a way to close that gap for her. So you hear those stories, and you know we've got to continue to find ways to reduce the cost and provide more resources for those kids that really need it along the way. So,
second question. Uh-huh. Is there any plans for expansion of like the executive program, the MBA programs outside of Texas,
yeah,
online?
Mm-hmm. So we actually have an online MBA program now, and it's kind of in that executive MBA genre. And it's about maybe three?
It's a couple years
old. Years old. It's fairly new, so you should look at it if you don't have an MBA yet. And then the other thing I would say, as part of our strategy to grow graduate and professional programs, most universities that have fairly large graduate professional programs are in urban locations. So I was at Pepperdine, and we had urban campuses in LA. I was at George Washington. We were an urban campus, and you can have really large graduate professional programs for working professionals. We are not in that kind of a location in Waco. So most of our graduate programs on our campus are for full-time graduate students. So we know that to sort of have the strategy we do around graduate professional education that are those kinds of programs that actually create excess resources. We've got to tap more into that working professional market. And so we know one of the ways we've got to do that is through online programs. So we, prior to this year, had one in just a brand new one coming out in litigation management. We've got one in nursing. We have the MBA.
Master of Public Health.
Public Health, we had that. And then we, this year, reached an agreement with 2U, which is one of the best top providers in the country that helps provide the infrastructure. And they're doing 3 degree programs with us. And one of those is in social work, which is, oddly enough, like the highest demand online master's program in the country right now is social work. One of those is, I'm trying to remember what the other two were that were the two.
Education.
Oh, an educational leadership program. And I think we had like 90 applications in that program in the first 3 or 4 weeks that we opened up. And then the third one is in the health area and health sciences. And so we know we've got to expand in that online space, but do it carefully, of high quality, and consistent with our mission. So, and we approved 5 new graduate programs separate from those 3 at our board meeting. 2 or 3 of those were in the health space. We've got a lot of opportunity in health. So we're going to be expanding the online and blended opportunities for people to do graduate and professional programs at Baylor, which would mean people that aren't in Waco will have more of that opportunity than they've ever had before.
Yes.
So you spoke a little bit about athletics being kind of a window into the university and the arts as well. But so are programs like Baylor and Washington,
Absolutely.
Texas Hunger Initiative. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. How are we supporting programs like that?
Yeah. So like the Texas Hunger Initiative really falls in that human flourishing bucket. And it is one of the areas there. And it's now, it resides in our social work school. And so it is one of those initiatives under that umbrella that is getting important attention. We actually spend a lot of time in Washington supporting that program because of some federal funding that we think may come to that program over the coming years, in addition to the funding that we actually get in Texas, which we continue to work on. It's a wonderful program, and it has a tremendous ability. Right now, it's pretty Texas-focused. We hope over time, if we can get some federal funding, it can actually become more of a national model that it flows outside of the state. The Washington, D.C. program is a fabulous program for us. They have done some really wonderful work. We've actually, historically, for students studying in that program, they actually took classes at American University. We've actually brought that program in-house. So beginning this fall, we will be teaching the the classes, and they will not be offered by American. We'll use some faculty from that region that know DC really well. So Dean Hibbs and the Honors College are continuing to work very closely with that program, build it out, and continue to make it an important part of what we do. It's also a really good anchor for us because we spend time in Washington, DC with our senators and congressmen and women lobbying for educational activities that are critically important to us in the success of what we do as an institution. So I've been to Washington, D.C. a couple of times, met with people on the Hill, and so having that program there gives us a lot of visibility, which is important as well.
Yeah, the Baylor and Washington program also gives us an opportunity to bring a kind of a Christian viewpoint into discussions. Last week, Cornel West and, great dialogue.
Robbie George had. I don't know how familiar you are with those two folks, but Cornel West and Robbie George are colleagues at Princeton, and one of them's probably about as conservative as you'll get, and the other one's probably about as liberal as you will get, and they teach a class together at Princeton, and they talk about civility and how you can bring these disparate perspectives. They're both Christians, but how you bring these disparate sort of political opinions and can actually have civil dialogue and discussion around those. And they did a session in D.C. last week around Martin Luther King and the role he's played in influencing society. And I was not able to be there, but heard it was just a fabulous event and a wonderful example of how we can have differences of opinion, but can still be have dialogue and discussion around it, learn from one another. And so we have, a unique privilege to be able to do that in a way that other institutions probably can't.
Any questions this side of the room?
Do you see conference realignment as a threat, and is there anything we can or should do to
You know, I just got back. My first day on the job last year, June 1st, was at the Big 12 Board of Directors meeting. And so my anniversary every year will be at the Big 12 Board of Directors meeting, which it was last week. And, there is not a lot of talk right now about conference realignment. Our TV contract runs through 25. So I think things are pretty stable right now. And I think when the conference decided not to expand a couple of years ago, that kind of settled things down as well. And the conference is really strong, and there's a lot of a good feeling among the presidents and chancellors of the conference. So I think people are feeling really good about where we are. Our financials are looking really good. We had a team in the Final Four and a team in the National Championship playoffs, which we're the only conference that had teams at both of those levels. So I think we're feeling good about where the conference is, and we'll certainly continue to monitor it. It's when those TV contracts start to get closer where there starts to be a lot of noise in the system. But conferences, their TV contracts all end at different times. So we pay a lot of attention to it and talk about it at all the meetings, but I think we feel pretty good about the stability right now, and we obviously continue to pay close attention to that.
Maybe time for two more questions.
Yes.
One person can have two questions and then another person has another. So
the first one's kind of a comment question. I'm wondering if there's been any thought as we're really focusing on the Christian Christ-centered nature of the university, scholarships for pastors' kids. It's very interesting to me that that is not one of the options. There are scholarships for missionary kids, but there are not scholarships for pastors' kids.
I haven't been involved in a discussion where we've really talked about that, and I don't know where those discussions have or haven't occurred, but it's a good thing for us to take back and ask about. It's a great question. Absolutely. Yeah, well, I understand that. With a kid at Baylor. Yeah.
Building that further, a little bit about Honors College, but can you speak to that a little bit?
Sure.
The importance of
Yeah, no, I mean, in our College of Arts and Sciences, our largest college, half of our undergraduates in their College of Arts and Sciences. And the College of Arts and Sciences, as a matter of fact, just approved a new core curriculum that had not been revised for, I don't know, since like World War II or something, yeah, right? Like literally,
40
years. I'm not actually like joking. It was literally that long. And so, and that redesign of that curriculum was designed to provide a little bit more flexibility in it, and to help students align it better with their interest within the college. And then that curriculum, that core curriculum in the college, also is the core curriculum for several of our other colleges. Not all of them, but several of them. So it's critically important to us, and we recognize the value of that liberal arts component to our students, and it's partly why there's such a large student body population that goes through that program. I think the other thing that I would say kind of ties back to the research, and our College of Arts and Sciences is really a leader in this. We also, as we do more research and more graduate programs, one of the things we're doing is looking at how do we make sure that we give our undergraduate students more research opportunities as well. That's actually one of the reasons we think this is an important initiative. We have so many undergraduates in the top around the country, regardless of what college they're in, that want to continue. They've maybe done research in high school. They want to continue to do research, and we've got to have the capacity for them to do that. And that research might be related to the humanities and social sciences, or it might be in the STEM areas. And so as we build out our research portfolio, it also gives our students that opportunity to do that hands-on research with faculty, which also helps develop their critical thinking skills and their logic processes and so on. So, yeah, we take very seriously what we're doing in that core curriculum and that liberal arts component. And I think we're also looking for ways we can give students more flexibility to take classes across colleges. That's not always very easy at Baylor to do. And as we do more interdisciplinary research, have more interdisciplinary degree programs, which is really where the world's going, the more we can make it easier for students to do interdisciplinary study, it will also help with the kinds of things you're talking about.
All right, final question. Yes.
I'm having a hard time framing this question, but I absolutely believe in the mission of Baylor as a Christian institution, mm-hmm. and it needs to be that always. Mm-hmm. And I like the emphasis that you talked about concerning the ethical component mm-hmm. of some of these decisions. But over the last 20 years, those are two areas that Baylor has really suffered. Mm-hmm. And publicly suffered, first with the Enron crisis, secondly with the, in my opinion, some poor selection of leaders, and then the athletic episode, mm-hmm. and then the episode that resulted in the Baylor Lyon Foundation. Mm-hmm. So we're looking at Baylor as a Christian institution, and we see the practice. Mm-hmm. At least the public sees the practice is mm-hmm. not there. And the question comes, who's watching the clock? Who's yeah. the person looking over the shoulder and saying, wait a minute, this may not be a good thing to do. We're not teaching what we need to teach to our students, or mm-hmm. our leaders are not behaving the way they are to behave. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Well, I'm that person now, so I accept responsibility for that. Doesn't mean we're not going to make mistakes and that we're not going to have to get better at some of the things we do, but it's the board's responsibility and it's the president's responsibility and then the leadership team that we put together. And we talk about this a lot. I mean, something we talked a lot about this year is that we just have to every single day do the best we can to do what we say we're going to do and to live out our mission. It's part of the reason we developed those four principles for making decisions, so that we could sort of hold ourselves accountable, that we're all trying to use the same foundational principles for making decisions. And, you know, you don't rebuild that trust overnight. It takes a long time. Someone told me, where did I hear this, that you lose trust in sort of rain barrels of water going away, and you get trust back in raindrops of water filling the barrel back up. Mm. And so we're filling the barrel back up with raindrops right now. And so we recognize that takes time to do that, but we're committed to it. We've got the right people, I think, in leadership positions in our athletic program, as our deans, and the board is really on board with where we need to go and leading in the right way. So we recognize that we've got, you know, there's a history there that you have to work on and overcome, but we feel confident we can. We feel like we've made great progress with that. But again, we know it's a daily task of living out the mission in the way that we need to. So I understand completely and appreciate that.
And I think that that's one way we've talked a lot about light.
Exactly.
The opportunity is now. It's time for us to move into the light and take responsibility for those things.
So I'm going to ask you a question, because you actually were kind of the author and your team of the Lights campaign that we've been doing, that has really been a way to sort of reintroduce Baylor to the community. It's been such a great success for us. I would love for you to share a little bit about how that came about and how we sort of came to that as the direction we wanted to go.
Yeah, certainly. I didn't think I'd be answering questions tonight, but we came to a point that Baylor had had some challenges. We had been in somewhat of a period of darkness for a couple of years, and when you came on board, we started talking about how could we reintroduce Baylor to not only across the state of Texas, but around the country in a real, authentic way. We didn't want to come out and look like we were trying to spin our way out of issues, or trying to buy advertising or something like that to run from what we've been through. And so we're looking at how do we reintroduce Baylor in something that is core to who we are and in what we believe in. And so we started looking for some people to help us do that, because it was a very tall order coming in. And we found a firm out of Dallas who we started talking with and campaign, and we started looking at this concept of light. You know, we've been in darkness. How do we come to the light and shine a light, not only what we've been through, but shine a light on this great university that we all know and love, this great university that's growing and is really transforming lives. And so we started looking at this and started seeing that, you know what, there's such scriptural references to light. In fact, some of the translations, there's over 200 references to light in the Bible. And so we started unpacking that a little bit more and started looking at our students, the incredible work that they do in bringing light on our campus, bringing light in communities, helping solve some of these incredible problems that affect us all. And so we evolved, and we found this song. Has anybody ever heard of DC Talk back in the day? Some of us, there's DC Talk. A guy named Toby Mack was the lead singer, and he collaborated with this singer named Holland on this song, "Where Light Shine Bright." So all of a sudden, all this stuff starts coming together, and we had a campaign, and it's not just a campaign, it's really become who we are at Baylor right now, as Dave was talking about earlier.
Yeah, it's been amazing to see. I get emails from faculty and staff and students say, well, let me show you how our lights are shining bright, and they'll send me pictures of interesting things that they're doing, and the language of light has become very quickly embedded in our community. I mean, we use it a lot, but just anybody on campus, when they start talking about what's going on, and I don't know if anybody was at graduation, but we actually had students stand up and share how their lights began to shine bright at Baylor, how people shined into their lives, and it was really a very special time. So it's been and I appreciate you and your team for pulling that together, because it's been a really wonderful platform, and then it helps us launch the strategic plan Illuminate, and then the campaign called Give Light. So it will have a long tail to how we talk about light. And frankly, there aren't other universities in the country that can use that imagery in the way we can, and we wanted to have something that differentiated us from others out there, and this is really doing a nice job of that.
Well, thanks for kicking off the campaign in a big way.
Happy to do it.
We are so glad that you guys joined us tonight, and one thing is that we do an audio recording, and we post it online, but it's also an opportunity for you to go and to share it with some people who may not have been able to make it tonight, or you want to share how great Baylor is with some friends or kids in school or something like that. We make it available to you. So we'll have it online within the next couple of days. So we're going to close out tonight. President Livingstone will be here for a little bit longer, and our staff will as well, if you have any additional questions. And thanks for coming, and be safe going home tonight.
Thank you all very much.